Yeah, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter Monday called on Turkey to stay focused on the fight against Islamic State and not engage with U.S. allied Kurdish forces, part of the Syrian Democratic Forces battling the terror group in Syria. Carter welcomed Turkey's military intervention that captured the IS-held town of Jarablus.
The United States was very supportive and is very supportive of their general counter-ISIL activities and everything they did to secure the area between the border and Jarablus and then westward, but not south of Jarablus, nor to engage the Syrian Defense Forces.
Turkey and its Syrian rebel allies are trying to drive IS militants and Kurdish YPG forces from border areas. The Kurdish forces recently helped push IS militants out of the town of Manbij, west of the Euphrates River. White House Deputy National Security Advisor Ben Rhodes urged the Kurds to vacate to the east.
We've communicated to the SDF that they should not be engaged in military activity against Turkish forces. And again, they have a commitment to retrograde east of the Euphrates River as well.
President Obama is to meet his Turkish counterpart, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, on the sidelines of a G20 meeting in China September 4th. Gabonese opposition presidential candidate Jean Ping Monday maintained he won Saturday's election, calling on incumbent Ali Bongo to acknowledge defeat. Mr. Bongo's supporters insist he won the ballot. Both sides accuse each other of fraud. Official results are expected Tuesday. The tiny West Central African country has a one-round system where the candidate with the most votes wins. Mr. Bongo succeeded his late father in 2009, who died after ruling the oil-rich nation for decades. This is VOA News. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in New Delhi for the 7th U.S.-India Strategic Dialogue. He arrived from Bangladesh Monday, where he warned the Islamic State had links with operatives in that South Asian nation.
There is evidence that ISIL in Iraq and Syria has contacts with about 8 different entities around the world, and one of them is in South Asia. And they are connected to some degree with some of the operatives here, and we made that very clear in our conversation. There was no argument about it.
Kerry said the two countries agreed to additional steps to work jointly through intelligence and law enforcement. Bangladesh was rocked by a July 1st attack claimed by Islamic State at a Dhaka cafe, which left more than 20 dead. The top U.S. diplomat in a speech Monday urged the government not to stifle public debate or opposing views and protect workers' rights. The U.S. and India Monday signed a key logistics agreement to enable U.S. and Indian forces to use each other's bases for repair and replenishment of supplies. The agreement signed by U.S. Defense Chief Carter and his Indian counterpart, Manohar Parrikar, at the Pentagon near Washington.
This reflects our shared intent to take India-U.S. defense partnership forward. Indeed, defense cooperation between India and United States have never been stronger than is today.
Both officials said the logistics exchange memorandum of agreement does not mean they can set up bases in each other's country, but will use existing bases and equipment only for operating together when they choose to do so. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for an attack on the Iraqi oasis town of Ain el-Tamr near the Shia holy city of Karbala, southwest of Baghdad, late Sunday, killing at least 15 people, most from a wedding party, wounding some 20 others. The attackers armed with suicide vests, rifles, and grenades. All the attackers were killed by security forces. Tunisia's defense ministry Monday said 3 soldiers were killed in an explosion after a patrol hit anti-tank mines near the Algerian border. 7 other soldiers were wounded when the suspected Islamist gunman opened fire on the patrol in the western Kasserine region. The Italian Coast Guard says it picked up an estimated 6,500 migrants Monday off the Libyan coast, one of the busiest days since people from Africa and the Middle East began flooding European ports. It conducted 40 rescue operations that also included vessels from humanitarian organizations and the EU border agency Frontex. With U.S. consumer spending up for a 4th straight month, U.S. stocks were up Monday with the benchmark Dow Jones average closing above 18,500 points. Bank stocks were higher as well after the chairperson of the U.S. Central Bank hinted at a possible interest rate hike later next month. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gabon is on edge as results from Saturday's presidential election are expected today.
According to the Interior Minister, results will be announced today. So the city is very tense because everybody is waiting for the first result to be published today.
That's VOC Idriss Fall in Libreville, Gabon. Democratic Republic of Congo Supreme Court orders the release of three pro-democracy leaders. Burundi's parliament is set to review a plan to scrap a presidential term limit. And consolidating peace and security in Lesotho is high on the agenda as Southern African leaders meet today, Tuesday, in Swaziland.
As for now, the main issue in Lesotho is the problem of the security, simply because ever since we came back from election, there have been so many threatening issues concerning the security.
Samuyane Nsekele is the Secretary General of the All Basotho Convention, Lesotho's main opposition party. Meanwhile, the government says it has instituted some political reforms. And campaigners seek to end begging by Quranic students in northern Nigeria. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tensions are high in Gabon as the country's election commission is set to release results from Saturday's presidential election. Incumbent and longtime leader Ali Bongo is being challenged by opposition candidate and former African Union Commission chair Jean Ping. Ping reiterated again on Monday that he won the election and has accused the commission of manipulating the results. This comes as the European Union Election Observer team said on Monday that the election lacked transparency. On the line to Gabon's capital, Libreville, is VOA's French to Africa reporter Idriss Fall. Good morning again, Idriss.
Good morning, James Batty, and good morning to all your listeners.
Thank you for joining us again. Just bring us up to date. What's happening today is Tuesday, and we hear that perhaps the results are supposed to be announced, or some results. What do you know?
According to the Interior Minister, results will be announced today. And even he gave a time, he said 5 p.m. local time. So the city is very tense because everybody is waiting for the first result to be published today.
Idriss, the expectation of the results is coming on the heel of the European Union observer team there declaring that the presidential election itself lacked transparency. How are they taking this news in Libreville?
Yes, I was at the press conference of the European Union. I think her name was Maria Gabriel. What she said, yes, it looks transparent, and we are not happy that a lot of people could not vote. They criticized a little bit the way the access to the media, and they said that it was not fair. And but at the end of the press conference, somebody asked, do you think that it was transparent? And the lady, her answer was, we come here invited by the government of Gabon, but we cannot judge the process. We are here only to observe, and our recommendations will come back later. So I think during the press conference, even you heard some journalists asking questions, why did you call us to come to your press conference since you cannot judge what you saw?
Idriss, as you said, that the challenger, Jean Ping, came out again on Monday to declare that he had won the election. So I'm wondering, what is it going to be like if the Elections Commission comes out today and said that the opposition lost the election? What is going to happen?
That is a good question because nobody knows what's going to happen tonight. Jean Ping said he won. He said it on Sunday. He came out and repeated it on Monday. Guys, I am the winner. Even he went to meet the U.S. ambassador and the French ambassador to tell them that he's the winner. Then it is that scared everybody here what will happen tonight when the interior minister come out and say the winner is Ali Bongo. Everybody's scared. People did their shopping because they don't know what's going to happen tonight. In 2009, you have a lot of violence after he was proclaimed a winner against a guy named Andrzej Obama, a novel former prime minister. So everybody's waiting to see how the result going to be proclaimed, either in favor of Mr. Jinping, meaning that Ali Bongo will accept his defeat, or the interior minister going to say Ali Bongo is the winner, and then nobody knows what's going to happen in this country.
That's VOA's Idriss Fall speaking with us from Libreville, Gabon. Consolidating peace and security in the Kingdom of Lesotho is high on the agenda as Southern African leaders meet today, Tuesday, in Swaziland. Lesotho has witnessed political violence in recent times, including an attempted coup and the assassination last year of a former army chief. The SADC Double Troika Summit held this past June in Gaborone, Botswana, mandated South African Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to assist the country consolidate peace and security. The opposition says the government has taken no concrete steps towards political reform. But Mutumi Ralejo, spokesman for Lesotho's prime minister, says his country is peaceful as the government has instituted some political reforms.
First and foremost is my country is very peaceful, and I believe that many people can attest to that. Yes, indeed, Lesotho appeared before the SADC Double Troika on issues relating to the opposition leaders who have shown recourse. But what is most important is that on the 28th of June, the Double Troika of SADC did make an emphasis on Lesotho to host a two-day security workshop, and also to ensure that the constitutional reform are underway, and for Lesotho to report in this very summit that you are referring to. That is what was expected. However, the understanding is that when the ministerial committee met in Mozambique, a number of issues were addressed, and Lesotho also ensured that there was progress with regards to what has been stated and put before us to ensure that Lesotho is adhering to the SADC decisions. And the understanding was that because we had made progress and we reported that progress, we were not going to be subjected to a scrutiny per se.
You mentioned the SADC Troika in June of 2016. As you know, they gave a mandate to the South African Deputy President Ramaphosa to facilitate the return of opposition political party leaders. Has your government made sure that these opposition people can come back?
No, I think what is important is the assignment was given to the facilitator, who is the Deputy President of South Africa.
But did he meet with your government to make sure that this happens?
Yes, he did meet with our government to report to the Prime Minister that he met with the opposition leaders in South Africa. But I think that he will give a full detail to the summit when he reports.
You mentioned your government has undertaken some reforms. Do these reforms include the civil society and the opposition leaders?
When we're talking about reforms, we're referring to constitutional reform, security sector reform, parliamentary reform, and judiciary reform, as well as public service reform. Those are the major reforms that Lesotho is embarking on.
Some of the opposition figures in your country are in exile in South Africa. Is your government willing for them to return?
The Prime Minister has always extended his olive branch to those opposition leaders residing in South Africa. That's why he even went to an extent in June to advise SADC if they could help, because he believes that he has done all he could to make sure that he asked the opposition leaders to return home.
Mutumi Ralejo is the spokesman for Lesotho's prime minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Maseru. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 30th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. The Secretary General of Lesotho's main opposition party, the All Basotho Convention, says the government is not serious about instituting meaningful political reforms. Samuele Nsekele has urged Southern African leaders who are meeting today in Swaziland's capital, Mbabane, to make the government investigate political murders and facilitate the return of exiled opposition leaders.
As for now, the main issue in Lesotho is the problem of the security. Our country is not having a good security by now. So the expectation is that in the Asani, since there's been some recommendation all along that the Pumapi report or the Pumapi recommendations should be implemented by the country of Lesotho. And since then, there hasn't been any progress. We wish SADC will urge the country of Lesotho to implement the recommendation, because with those recommendations, at least we will see light as the country of Lesotho into normalcy.
You said the main concern is security. Why are you concerned about security?
We are concerned about the security simply because as a country, ever since we came back from elections, there have been so many threatening issues concerning the security. To start with, immediately after the elections, the leaders of opposition left the country to the neighboring South Africa. They have been in exile ever since.
I was just speaking with the Prime Minister's spokesman, and he said that the government has instituted some reforms, though he refused to say to me what those reforms are. But as you were saying, that the Deputy President of South Africa, Mr. Ramaphosa, was mandated to facilitate the return of opposition political party leaders back to Lesotho from South Africa. Do you believe this has taken place?
It hasn't taken place. There are no reforms, as I can tell you. It's only the game that the country is playing. There's no initiatives of reforms. That is why the spokesperson cannot tell you of anything, but they will say they are doing something. Even for the investigation of the death of former commander Maparam Gwamahau, what the government reported is that now they have started actually forming a team of the policemen and the army to investigate the death of Mahal.
What message do you want to send to SADC as they prepare to meet on Tuesday?
What I can actually say to SADC is that we think the government of Lesotho should listen to SADC with the recommendation that the present commander should be removed. There should be investigation into the Mahal's death. All the officers in the army who are suspected of the wrongdoings, the crimes, should be suspended while investigations are being done. So we really wish SADC can force Lesotho or urge Lesotho to comply, which will save the country into the proposed reforms.
Samuyele Unsekele is the Secretary General of Lesotho's main opposition party, the All Basotho Convention. He was speaking with me from the capital, Maseru. Burundi's parliament is set to begin reviewing a report from a national commission convened by a president which calls for scrapping presidential term limits. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
In October 2015, the government of Burundi formed a commission to find a solution to the country's political crisis. The crisis began the previous April when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced a plan to run for a third term, a move that critics said violated the constitution and the Arusha Peace Agreement that ended the country's civil war. The 15-member committee was tasked with collecting the views of Burundians on the best way to put a stop to the crisis. Almost a year later, Parliament is set to debate the committee's provisional report, which says a majority of Burundians favour abolishing the two-term limit from the constitution. Vital Nshirimana is the head of Burundi's Forum for Strengthening Civil Society. He says the views presented to the parliament do not represent those of all Burundians.
From the starting of the commission, we noticed that the commission was exclusive because they only listened to people that are members of the CNDD, FCD or its allies, who from the beginning talked about the amendment of the constitution and the cancellation of term limits because they believed that this was an obstacle for Nkurunziza to run the country forever.
The opposition group SINARED, whose members are mostly in exile, has accused the government of blocking it from taking part in the political dialogue. The government has said it is reluctant to speak to those who were involved in armed conflict in the country. Hundreds of people died in clashes between protesters and security agencies last year. The commission's president, Bishop Justin Zoyusaba, acknowledges the commission has consulted only a quarter of the organizations with whom they plan to speak.
We had some groups like journalists. We have not talked to journalists. We have not talked to businessmen. We have some groups that we had to speak to. We had a group of, I think, 20 groups. And we have already spoken to six groups, but we have to speak to them before we give the final report.
Some opposition members say that if term limits are eliminated, it will be a setback for democracy. Vital says the move to change the constitution will create more problems.
This is extremely dangerous because this will lead to the same causes that led to the crisis that led to the civil war.
More than 300,000 Burundians were killed in the 13-year war, which ended in 2006. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Activists in northeast Nigeria have launched a campaign to end the begging tradition of children who live at Quranic schools. The widespread hunger epidemic induced by Boko Haram violence in the region has increased the number of these children called Amajiri. Chika Odua reports from Maiduguri.
These boys are learning to memorize the Quran here at a traditional Islamic school called a Sangaya. They were sent here by their parents who live far away. And as part of the tradition, they are required to beg for food.
Begging is luck. Sometimes you get food immediately when you go out. Sometimes you don't.
Thousands of Quranic students are on the streets begging every day in Maiduguri, the Borno state capital. For decades, the Amajiris have been a normal part of life here. But these days, more people see them as a nuisance. Cultural historian Bulama Mali Gubio says the practice has gotten out of hand.
Young kids, the age of 5, 6, 7, have been dropped in Maiduguri here in their thousands. They have no parents, no teacher, no guardian, nobody to take care of them.
Activists estimate there are more than 5 million Amajiris in Nigeria. Usman Mohammed was an Amajiri many years ago. These days, he's trying to reform the system.
If they are begging, some people will beat them, harass them, abuse them. All kind of insult. They have been experiencing all kind of humiliation.
Usman goes around the city to find Amajiris. One teacher, Umar Mohammed, has more than 100 students under his care. He says that forcing children to beg is un-Islamic but necessary.
This tradition has been around since our grandparents, so you can't just wake up and condemn it.
But more people are condemning it. Mohammed Kiana is an activist in the Nigerian capital of Abuja.
Have some prominent people, religious, political, and traditional rulers from the northern part of the country to speak on it. Let's have their position on camera. Are you in support of this? Do you condemn it? Let's condemn it on camera. You know, and once we have that, we can drive citizens, you know, to rally the government, you know, to have it take major policies, you know, that will bring an end to this system.
Ending this system means challenging deeply entrenched tradition. It's only after a long day in the streets that these Amajiris put down their begging bowls. Chika Odua for VOA News, Maiduguri, Nigeria.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's Minister of Information says his government is ready to release three pro-democracy leaders arrested in March last year for protesting against attempts by President Joseph Kabila to seek a third term. On Monday, the country's Supreme Court ordered the government to release the activists. Information Minister Lambert Mende says the release is part of the government's readiness for a national dialogue, which is set to begin September 1st this year.
It is a decision of the Justice Minister, Mr. Alexis Thambwe Mwamba, who decided to release five people because they accomplished what he told them as a prerequisite before to be released. It was not a decision from the court, because as far as court is concerned, you know that it takes time. So he advised them to stop making appeal, because if you make appeal, the government is forced to wait the answer from the court. So since the lawyers stopped this appeal, the minister was able to free them as a way of illustrating the goodwill of the government to make people cool down in order to help the negotiation and the reconciliation in the country.
But the minister, the justice minister, falls under the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court.
No, James. The court are independent from the ministry, from the government, and the government is not under the court. The government cannot interfere in the court procedures. Only when the court have finished to sentence someone, the law is saying that the president or the minister can release someone that have been already sentenced definitely.
Could it be that the release is coming because the justice minister or your government is under pressure from the outside, the international community, to release these people?
James, we are organizing national dialogue that was called by the president, and we want to cool down political situation. And to cool down political situation, the government decided by the order of the president to release some prisoners that are possible to release.
So what is the state of the national dialogue now? Because the last time we heard about it, or we talked to some opposition people, they had boycotted and they said that they did not want former Togolese Prime Minister Edim Kodjo to be the facilitator. So they boycotted. What is the state of the dialogue?
I can tell you that the majority of the opposition, the whole civil society and the whole presidential majority came to the preparatory meeting, and a part within the opposition boycotted. But we didn't hope in any case, knowing our culture, that there could be unanimity about the national dialogue in Congo. But we think that the most majority of Congolese are behind the idea of national dialogue, and it will start on the 1st of September, as I'm telling you.
Lamba Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He was speaking with me from Kinshasa. And here's our listener mail for today's Tuesday, August 30th.
This is Bapa Adamare Fota from Gombe local government area of Adamawa State, Nigeria. 75% of the weapons used by the terrorists, particularly the ISIS, are manufactured by the Western world. If that is the case, there is no difference between Zionism and terrorism. These are two sides of a coin. Thank you.
And we thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. And that is it for this Tuesday, August 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradak, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Tuesday on Health Chat, in light of the World Water Week, host Lenore Modou will discuss some waterborne diseases like cholera. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC right here on VOA Africa.